Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Bernice Good. Bernice went into preterm labor when her water broke at 31 weeks. Though the circumstances were less than ideal, she had what she describes as a lovely vaginal hospital birth with no interventions. However, there were some struggles during the 19-day NICU stay that followed, but she shares how they successfully navigated breastfeeding with all the obstacles of prematurity. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Vistaprint, helping you own the now in any situation. To get free shipping on all your business cards, any style, any quantity, go to Vistaprint.com and enter the promo code Birthful. Limited time offer. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Family Album, a family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. As always, thank you for all the love you give the show. If what you hear is helpful, you know what to do. Subscribe. It's free, and that way you won't miss a thing. To further support this podcast, you can also support its sponsors, which for this week's case are Vistaprint and Family Album. Now, here's a quick reminder that my new birth prep class series, they're underway, and I am accepting latecomers until February 17th. We have a delightful, intimate group, and I am loving doing the live class meeting format with them because we can see each other's faces and have conversations. It's been really fantastic. And the feedback has been amazing already. Come join us and learn about how you can support your birth physiology to take ownership of your birth so that it flows. And when birth flows, there's less need for interventions and birth is just easier. As one of the bonuses for the class, you get my birth partner's ultimate labor support toolkit. And there's even an option where you can get both the birth prep classes and my postpartum preparation classes together at a deep discount. So go learn more and sign up at birthfulcourses.com. Let's get you birth ready. All right. So my guest today is Bernice Good, who is here to share her preemie vaginal birth story. And as she was navigating her experience, she realized that there aren't that many resources for low intervention minded NICU parents. So she wanted to put her story out there for encouragement and is the reason she reached out. So let's get to it. Bernice, welcome. I am so happy to have you here on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Adriana.
Oh, it's great. First of all, I love hearing you say my name. Not that I don't like what other people say it, but you know.
Yeah, I had a little bit of practice.
So that tells me you've got some Latino roots in you.
Yes,
tell us a little bit about yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So my name is Bernice Good, and I live in Harrisonburg, Virginia with my husband, Branson Good. And he has a flooring company with his dad. And we've been married for 5 years. And a year ago, we welcomed our first child into the world. And his name is Declan. And I'm a stay-at-home mom to him. And like you said, I do have Latin roots. My dad was from Honduras. And my mom was from Pennsylvania. And before having Declan, I worked as an administrative assistant for 5 years.
Cool. Do you ever get down to Honduras?
No, I don't. I don't actually like to go back sometime. But yeah, it's just not really one of those things I've done yet.
Okay. Bucket list.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So your story is unusual in the sense that you ended up having a very early delivery. Your baby you were how far along when you had your baby?
I was 32 and 3.
Okay, 32 weeks, 3 days. So,
yeah,
that is quite unusual. And I definitely want to hear about everything behind that. But let's take you back to way before when you were first pregnant and what your wishes were for your birth and what you were doing to prepare. Like, how were those first few months?
Well, growing up, birth was something we never really talked about very much as a family. And it just kind of was almost taboo. And I just kind of thought birth was what you saw in the movies. You know, it was almost impossible or extremely unbearable or painful. But over the years, I've become more natural minded. And I started realizing, thanks in large part to your podcast and just from reading and educating myself, that birth is something natural and is something a woman's body under most circumstances is equipped to do. And it doesn't have to be scary or dreadful. So the more I thought about it, to me, it didn't make sense to have a natural process like birth being done in a hospital where, I mean, that's where you go when you're injured or need medical attention. And to me, hospitals signal emergency or high stress, and they have a more of a one-size-fits-all approach to birth. So I had decided long before getting pregnant that I didn't want to have a hospital birth. And what really cemented that desire for a natural birth, either at home or at a birth center, was watching my sister's birth video with her daughter, which took place at her home under a midwife's care. And I mean, at the time, I didn't have much interest yet in birth. But it did ignite the passion in me for being under care that encourages the mother to be able to go with her body signals and follow her tuition without medical interventions. And I just felt that for birth to be successful, I needed to be in a space that was secure for me emotionally and physically, which to me necessarily isn't a hospital, and also to have a supportive, well-informed team around me encouraging me.
And so then once you got pregnant and you had these wishes in mind, what did you do to set up that supportive team, and where were your, what was your desired place of birth?
Yeah. So there is actually a birth center just 15 minutes away from my house. So even before getting pregnant, I figured that I would go with that. I was fairly sure I would go with that. So, when we did conceive for the first time, I made sure to read everything I could, to eat healthy, and of course to be on the best prenatal. And I was sure everything was just going to go right because I was doing all the right things. But then around 8 weeks gestation, I started to bleed. And this was before I had even called the midwife and set up an appointment, because I mean, typically you wait a little longer. At around 8 weeks gestation, I started to bleed heavily and pass large clots of blood. So I had assumed that I miscarried. So I called the birth center, told them about it, and they told me to come in, and they did a quick ultrasound and confirmed that the baby was fine. But I continued to bleed every day, and about two more times I experienced very heavy bleeding. But every time I went back into the birth center to see if I'd miscarried, the baby's heartbeat was good and strong. So my midwife tested my blood to see if it was Rh negative, and it wasn't. So she scheduled a vaginal ultrasound at the local hospital. And by this point, I was 10 weeks along. So there they found that I had a 10x5 centimeter large subchorionic hemorrhage, which is when the placenta detaches, then reattaches to the uterus, creating a pool of blood. They also found that I had some fibroids, but that was not really addressed. And I didn't even see that on my records till I went back and looked at them myself. The bleeding from the hemorrhage stopped at around 16 weeks, and I had another ultrasound at 22 weeks. And the doctor confirmed that the hemorrhage had seemed to resolve itself. And he told me I shouldn't have to worry about it, except that the one thing to watch for was preterm labor, which of course, you know, I didn't even think about that. I was like, that's not going to happen to me.
And what were the indications that they were saying for the preterm labor? Like, yeah, when the doctor told you this is something you should be concerned about, or it's a possibility, did they explain a bit of the why?
No, he didn't. And it was just right end at our appointment there. And I just thought, you know, for sure. Well, actually, my sister had also had a subchorionic hemorrhage, and she didn't go into preterm labor. And so, I just kind of assumed that. I didn't ask questions. And looking back, I wish so much I would have. But yeah, hindsight's 20/20.
What were some of the questions you wish you asked?
I wish I would have asked what causes a subcarotic hemorrhage. Why, you know, why does that happen? And then I wish I would have asked if there was anything I could do to strengthen the sac in the meantime. So yeah, just some questions like that.
Yeah, and maybe something to keep in mind for next time. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
have you looked into these questions since?
Yes, I have. Actually, after he was born, I talked to my midwife and I asked her if she thought it was something to worry about, you know, down the road. And she said not necessarily, but that she would probably put me on progesterone supplements. But, you know, I wanted to know, well, why am I low in progesterone? And so those are some of the things that I wanted to investigate. And, since then I've gotten rid of like so many, endocrine disruptors in my house, you know, from toxic chemicals and lotions and shampoos and BPAs and that type of thing. So yeah, of course I can't, really test my hormones right now since I'm still, breastfeeding, but it's something I definitely want to do before the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like you're proactively checking all the boxes so that you make it to term next time.
Yeah,
in the future, no pressures. And you told me before we started recording that your son is almost one, so yeah you've got time.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy though how fast that baby fever does come back around.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So at 20 weeks, you had your ultrasound and the doctor said, you know, everything looks good, but there's this concern of possible premature labor. You went home. How did things continue after that?
Yeah. So I went on to have a totally normal pregnancy till 31 weeks, of course. It was a Sunday morning, almost a year ago to the day. And I had just got up and used the restroom and I went back to bed and then I felt this gush. And of course everyone thinks, oh no, I peed myself, but it didn't quite feel like that. So I continued with my morning. I started getting ready for church, but I noticed that I kept leaking on and off this clear, smellless fluid. I did not want to believe my water broke. So, I told my husband and he told me to call the midwife right away. She told me to come in and she tested the fluid. And it was indeed amniotic fluid. And she told me I'd probably broken my waters. And I asked her if she thought it had anything to do with the subchorionic hemorrhage. And she said possibly. So she told us to go to the hospital. To go home first and pack and head straight to the hospital. While she called the hospital with the NICU, which was about an hour away. So she notified them that we were coming. And I just remember sensing the urgency in her voice. And I was still dumbfounded because I was like, you know, this baby's not due for another 9 weeks. And I had felt that if the baby was indeed coming anytime soon, that all my intentions for a healthy pregnancy had crumbled and everything was in vain. But she told me that whenever I did start to go into active labor, that I could call the birth center and they would come and support and advocate for me and the birth that I wanted. So we got to the hospital and they did confirm that my waters were ruptured. And I remember the first thing I asked them was, does this now make me high risk for my next pregnancies? And the doctor said, well, yes, you'll always be considered high risk now. And that just kind of crushed me. And I also remember asking them, well, why did my water break? And my answer, I think I asked a few doctors this and my answer was pretty much all the same. And it was that, well, preterm premature rupture of membranes just happens in 10% of pregnancies. And I asked them if they thought it was due to the hemorrhage and the doctors just said probably, or it could be. And like I said, I'm still searching for answers on this and I'll probably never know for sure. But my gut does tell me it was probably in large part due to the hemorrhage and maybe the fibroids. And I did have a lot of ultrasounds and yeah, I don't know. There's some new studies about that and preterm labor too. So that's something to think about. And yeah, like I said, And go ahead.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things that there might not be an answer.
Yeah.
To. Yeah. And
yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap. To come to terms with that, I can understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And to just move on. Yeah.
Mm. Bernice, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to hear. So now your water's broken. What next? We'll be right back. Whether I'm off to gather with new parents or connecting with birth professionals, I make sure I have my business cards from Vistaprint on hand to help me go that extra step in making a connection. I know that their professional business cards do help me make a first great impression because people are always commenting on how much they like my cards. No matter where you are, say hanging out with other new parents at a playground or leaving the hospital after providing doula support, your next big opportunity could be coming right now. And Vistaprint is there to help you own the now with free shipping on any business cards in any quantity. Really, choose whatever style, finish, shape, or paper you like and get free shipping. And because you can pick the colors, fonts, design, and images, it means you can create something as unique and compelling as your business. The process is super easy. You first plug in your information and logo into any of the hundreds of fresh designs available at Vistaprint, tailored to your type of company, or you can do like I do and upload your own original layout. Then you pick the paper stock, style, and quantity that's right for you, and you can even upgrade to a unique touch like rounded corners, which is something that I definitely love. Then you order and receive your cards with free economy shipping when you use the code BIRTHFUL. You can feel good knowing that Vistaprint uses only carefully selected inks and responsibly sourced paper stocks. And your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed or your money back. They will make it right. Vistaprint wants you to be able to own the now in any situation, which is why Birthful listeners will get free shipping on all business cards, any style, any quantity. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter the promo code BIRTHFUL for free shipping on all business cards, any style, any quantity. It's a limited time offer. Own the now at Vistaprint.com with the promo code BIRTHFUL. And we are back talking with Bernice Good about her birth story. And so your water just broke prematurely at 31 weeks and you're at the hospital and you're getting answers that, that you're now going to be considered high risk. Where were you at all this in terms of your mental state? What were you thinking?
I was really just in shock and just kind of in disbelief. I remember they showed me around the NICU floor and I just thought, well, I thought of everything before this all happened. Of course, I had thought of everything going wrong except for this. And it was just kind of hard to wrap my mind around. And I was still working at the time and had to tell them that, I can't come back to work right now. And they were very gracious about it, which I'm so thankful for. I think a lot of just shame and it was almost humiliating to think of being a preemie mom, especially since I had thought I had done so many things to have a healthy pregnancy. And I just didn't understand why this was happening.
Tell me a little bit more about that. I wasn't expecting you to say shame and humiliation of because... Were you feeling that this was your fault in some way?
Yeah. I felt a lot of guilt, yet I couldn't pinpoint, why. And it wasn't like I had gone and intentionally broken my waters. And I just remember thinking, well, maybe it was because I had had a cough and maybe that put pressure on the amniotic sac and, just kind of these ridiculous thoughts or whatever going through my head. And, I think I was scared too, what his state would be like, what all he would need. And I just almost didn't want people to pity me for some reason. I think it was just a lot of my pride and just that I was sure that I was going to have this pregnancy like I had planned.
Mm-hmm. And that's, right, one of the hardest things about birth is it does its own thing. And you never know. It's a very humbling experience no matter what. And you can prepare as much as you want, but there's that uncertainty, and that it's also a 50-50 partnership with your child. And sometimes they want to be born in a different way, or circumstances are such that doesn't go according to plan. So you're having all these feelings at the same time they're giving you a NICU tour. What is going on with your body? Do you start having contractions, or was it just the fluid kept coming?
Once they admitted me, they promptly gave me 4 days of antibiotics through an IV to keep away any infection, and as well as they gave steroids for the baby's lungs. And that was kind of hard for me too, to accept the antibiotics with, you know, the damage they can do in your gut and all that. I was continually leaking the amniotic fluid. And when I would lay down, it didn't really much, but then as soon as I stood up, it would, cause I guess it just pools when you're laying down. But then when I stood up, it would leak out.
Yeah. And your body keeps making it.
Yeah. Which I think is crazy. And then they would monitor me every morning and evening, and I was having some contractions, but I think they were just Braxton Hicks. At least that's what they felt like to me.
And were they trying then as much as possible just to extend the pregnancy, to give your son as many days as was safe to be inside?
Yeah. They told me that if I was able to ward off labor till 34 weeks, they would induce me, which didn't sound super appealing to me, but I also wanted the baby to be able to stay inside for as long as possible. Like you said, every day in the womb takes off like a week in the NICU. So every day he was still inside was a celebration for sure. They didn't tell me that I had to be on bed rest. I could get up and walk around and go downstairs. But of course not do anything crazy. So I was just in the hospital for 8 days. Until then I went into active labor.
So at 8 days, it suddenly started on its own?
Yeah. And the night before I went into labor, which maybe is just a total coincidence, but I remember that I was sitting up kind of right on my cervix, and I was sitting like that for maybe 2 hours. And then I kind of remember feeling like almost like the baby had just become really low. Who knows? but then it was a Sunday night around 12 a.m. I had gone to sleep, and then I started noticing these cramps, and which pretty much felt like period cramps. And it woke me up, and I looked at the clock, and I noticed that they seemed to be coming regularly, every 45 minutes. And I tried to distract myself by sleeping in between the cramping or watching Netflix. And then they started coming every 30 minutes. And I kept telling myself this wasn't labor. In fact, I was Googling things of what it could be, everything except for labor. And by the time morning came, I had convinced myself that this wasn't labor. So I told my husband that I didn't quite feel myself, but he should go on to work, and that if anything changed, I would tell him. Now, this hospital was an hour away from where we lived. So, I mean, it was something that we kind of sat and debated about, but he left and he told me to make sure to tell him as soon as anything changed. So after that, I took a shower and got dressed, hoping, you know, that would make the cramping go away and make me feel better. But then when I used the restroom, I saw I had lost my mucus plug. And I just became increasingly uncomfortable. And it was funny because even the cafeteria lady, she noticed something was off, and she brought me in my breakfast and she asked if I was okay. And by this time, I told my husband to come back to the hospital just in case. And I made sure to eat as much as I could, because I knew that hospitals don't let you eat once they know you're in labor.
Depending on the hospital.
Yeah. Right. In the mornings, the doctors would make their rounds, but they were taking particularly long this morning. But when they finally came, I told them that I was having these odd cramps about every 15 minutes now, and that I had just lost my mucus plug. And the doctor said, well, we'll hook you up to the monitors and see what's going on. You might be in labor, you might not be. But by this time, I was like, I'm pretty sure this baby's coming soon. So they hooked me up to the monitors, and I was contracting every 10 minutes now. And the nurse came in and she asked me what my pain level was on a scale of 1 to 10. And I told her maybe a 4. And she proceeded to tell me that the doctor was going to come in and check me. And around this time, my husband had made it back to the hospital, thankfully. And I was so relieved to see him.
Oh, I bet. Well, for sure.
And so the doctor checked me and I was at a 5. And I heard him tell the nurses to call the NICU and to get me over to labor and delivery. And I knew that everything was happening really fast. And I knew that if I let myself give in to fear and disappointment and worry, things would probably not go well. My mind felt just really numb, yet at the same time, very sharply focused for the task at hand. And I knew that I needed to commit to the moment. Even though it was too early, the next thing on the list was to birth this baby as peacefully as possible. And yeah, I had, of course, watched and read so many birth stories, but at the same time, I didn't really know what to expect since we hadn't even attended our birthing class yet. So the nurse got me set up in the new room and hooked me up to the monitors and IV. And she told me that she would get the portable monitor so that I could move around. But what's really odd is when I had envisioned my birth, I thought of it as me moving around a lot, maybe on my hands and knees. But it was strange because all I wanted to do was lie as still as possible and doze off in between contractions. So contractions grew closer together, and in between, I would close my eyes and rested, and I pictured myself climbing a snowy mountain, and instead of focusing on the top of the mountain, which would have been the birth, I focused on getting from point to point, each contraction being a point, and I tried to think of them as waves, but that illustration didn't actually work for me. So yeah, during the contractions, I just went from bunching my fists to embracing the pain, knowing it wouldn't last forever. And at this point it was just me and my husband in the room, thankfully. But the nurse came in and she checked me again and said that, they were watching me on the monitors, but she said that that labor might slow down or maybe stop. But I just knew that, yeah, I just something told me. I was like, no, this baby's coming today, very soon.
I really love that visualization you had going of a snowy mountain and going from point to point. That seems so serene. And I appreciate how you were just, you know, you have read, you had heard, you had gathered information, but say the waves, and that wasn't quite working for you. So you didn't get stuck on that, but found something that worked for you and didn't get stuck of like, oh, but I should move, but rather listen to your body and your intuition saying, I'm going to sleep instead.
Yeah, sleep while you can. Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and that sleeping is actually one of the best things you can do during labor if you can do it. And I know that sounds like, wait, what? But because it gets you out of your thinking brain. When you're sleeping, you're definitely not thinking, and you're in those altered deep brain waves of labor land. So, and then you can have more access to different ways of knowing. Like you're saying, your intuition of just knowing she was coming quick, even though that wasn't what others were observing.
Yeah, exactly.
What time was this, more or less?
When the contractions were 20 minutes apart, it was 7:30 in the morning. By 10:30, I was at a 5. And I was contracting probably every 15 minutes. And then he was born almost at 1 o'clock. So right now, where I'm at in my story, it was probably around noon.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the next thing that happened was the anesthesiologist came in and he went over my options for an epidural. And all this while, I was in the midst of a very large contraction and I signed the form refusing those options. And I just remember thinking, this baby is coming really soon. I wouldn't even have time to get that all set up. And he was born shortly after that. So 12:30 came and I felt more uncomfortable and I started to try to move around. But that just did not feel right to me. And I moved to my side. And then I told my husband to go get the nurse because I had this incredible urge to push. And she came in and I said, I have to push. And she told me to wait as long as I could and to take small, quick breaths. And I just remember thinking, are you kidding me? I had been taking these long, deep breaths and quick breaths just tends everything up. And she typed on the computer fast as she was notifying the doctors and the NICU team to make their way up. And they finally came rushing in. I think it took probably 3 to 5 minutes and they set things up and raised my bed and surrounded me. And my husband was by my side, then the doctor, and this was a university hospital. So there were resident doctors there, a NICU nurse and my labor nurse. And so in total with the students, the NICU team, there was probably maybe around 15 people in the room.
That's a lot of people.
I remember telling myself, don't think about it. Just focus on the people in front of you. And they quickly did another ultrasound just to make sure that he was head down. And I mean, thank the Lord he was because, who knows what would have happened otherwise.
They would have delivered a breech birth of a baby from the looks of it. From
yeah,
the sounds
yeah
of it.
Probably. I was finally quote unquote allowed to push and, but I wasn't contracting.
Did they check you?
I think they did. Okay. I was thinking about that earlier and I don't even remember if they did or not, but I'm fairly certain they did.
Okay.
And then once I was allowed to push, I wasn't contracting and I thought, oh no, is my labor going to slow down? But, the contractions came and about 5 minutes later, I felt what felt like a cork popping off the wine bottle and I felt his little body slide through me. And they quickly placed him on my chest and, I was just in complete shock and amazement and, they confirmed no tearing, which was such a huge relief to me, but, wasn't shocking since he only weighed 4 pounds and 3 ounces.
Itty bitty.
Yes. Yes. So they right away cut his cord and shortly took him away. I think he maybe spent, I don't know, maybe 15 seconds laying on my chest. They took him away out of the room, I guess, down to the NICU. And my husband, he tried to go with him, but they actually wouldn't let him, which I don't know, it kind of baffles me looking back and we actually discovered months afterwards that they had given him some things that we did not actually consent to. And I had never been admitted to a hospital. And I wish I had known hospital protocol better. And after listening to your podcast with Kristen Pascucci, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, yeah.
I know so much more in that. And yeah, that was so helpful.
Yeah. And with that, you know, that's a great reminder because I'm always saying, you know, make sure you tour your hospital, mm-hmm. make sure you ask about protocol for triage and admittance. So, you know, but that's a great reminder to actually also ask for protocol in case of NICU admission.
Yes, for sure. And I had wished, looking back, that I had called my midwives at the birth center, and had them come down because they knew about those things at that point a lot better than I did.
And at the same time, like it's during pregnancy, you're thinking about so many things and learning so much. Like, you can't know everything. Right? So it's not, don't. Also balancing out, I want to say, like, yes, it's great to know, but also balancing out that guilt of, like, look, you can't ask, don't, oh, I guess I want to say, don't blame yourself for thinking that. Yeah. Bernice,
Exactly.
let's take another break. When we come back, obviously, I want to know what happened. We'll be right back. So my husband is a photographer, which means he usually takes magnificent photos for any and all gatherings with friends and family. But that means that I usually never get to see those photos since they live on his phone or they're scattered all over my email or text messages when he does share them with me. And so I cannot easily find them when I want to. Enter Family Album. Family Album is a fantastic family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. The app is free, it offers unlimited storage, and it has no ads. I really appreciate so many of the features of Family Album, like the fact that your photos and videos are automatically sorted by date, or that they put together short video collages with 1 second clips that highlight your best photos and videos, so then you can watch how your children grow and change over time. And, all those memories come flooding back to you. Now, one of my favorite things, though, is that Family Album keeps things private so that only the people you invite can see your family's photo album. That has been really great for my parents and siblings who live in Venezuela, as we can now easily share pictures exclusively with them. And since I granted them permission for uploading images as well, I can see what's going on with them on my family album. And because people can also add comments, we have little conversations around each memory. I highly recommend you give Family Album a try. I am enjoying it immensely. And I think you will also be pleasantly surprised. Remember that Family Album is free to use with unlimited storage and has no ads. Family Album does not collect user data and has strong privacy controls in place. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. That's Family Album, all in one word. And we are back. So your son was just whisked away to the NICU, or your husband was with you. Let's focus first on what's happening with you, and then we'll go to baby. But, like, what were the next steps for you in this situation?
Yeah, so the first thing I remember was that I was just incredibly cold, and I kind of felt my body just was almost shaking. Yeah, we were just kind of sitting there in shock, just so thankful for the peaceful delivery and that things went well. They also delivered my placenta, and then the nurse took me to the restroom. And around this time, my IV in my arm was getting sore, and they said they needed to put another one in. And I said, "Well, why?" And the nurse said, "Well, your dose of Pitocin isn't done." And I hadn't even known they were giving it to me. And I wasn't hemorrhaging or anything. And she said she would ask the doctor if they could just stop the dose. And she came back and said I would need to finish it. And just like we said earlier, I did have a voice, and I could have said something. But yeah, hindsight's 2020.
And in those situations, this is something we've been talking a lot within the doula community as well, because when you're going through such emotional, heightened situations, and you just had a baby and he was whisked away, and all the things that are going through your mind, and you just gave birth, and you're feeling cold, you're shaking, and the shakes are actually a really normal part of birth. It can happen during labor itself or afterwards, and it's almost a protective. I have a great episode with Leslie Everest coming up, and we're digging deeper into the reason, like, everybody shakes, so why the shakes? And reading to Peter Levin and somatic experiences, and how that shaking can be a protective mechanism to your of your neurological system to shake off the excessive stress hormones that can then cause trauma. So that's a really interesting hypothesis, but and it kind of ties in with this idea of how much we say just shake it off. Is that what's behind that? So the fact that you were having all of that going through you, asking you, you're not in a state of mind to actually be fully present logic thinking, to advocate and say, hey, but you know, this or that or the other. And sometimes if you're in a little bit of a state of trauma, it you might be having a freeze response, which in that case, you can't necessarily speak up.
Yeah, that's definitely what it felt like. Yeah,
so I'd like to take away a little bit of the guilt from that, because so as doulas, sometimes we're accused or told, you know, why didn't you say something when whatever was happening? Or just in the same way as expectant parents or new parents might be told, well, why didn't you say something when your doctor was doing this? And that is coming, that's a different state of mind. That's like telling somebody who's experiencing trauma in a way, why didn't you say something? Well, because biologically I was in a, I wasn't in that mind state of mind. I was like in a more freeze response. So it's not always something that you can do. It's easy to say, why didn't you do it afterwards?
Yeah. That's really interesting.
So you were, so they said, no, you have, did they give you a new IV, a new Heplock?
Yes.
To continue.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, after that, we were able to see our son Declan 2 hours after that. And she was in the NICU, in an incubator with an NG tube from his nose to stomach. And he had CPAP, which is a breathing aid. And, I just remember he looked so distressed and was breathing so fast. And, it just felt so helpless that I couldn't hold him and comfort him, but he spent 19 days in the NICU, and this hospital didn't have a room and option. So we just commuted back and forth from home every day. And we spent a lot of time doing skin to skin. And one of the nurses told me that babies who do skin to skin as much as possible go home sooner. And she was even saying that in some third world countries where they don't have incubators, they just have people doing round the clock skin to skin, which I thought was really interesting.
Right, because they're getting more than just warmth from the skin to skin. Oh, I'm gonna link on the show. I've been making notes, and I will link on the show notes to what's called Kangaroo Care, which is Kangaroo Care involves, in the NICU, they do it especially for preemies, but it's that constant skin to skin and with exclusive, or trying to do exclusively breastfeeding as much as possible. Yeah. So what was the situation for you in terms of were you able to do skin to skin? You said you went to see him after 2 hours and he was in the incubator. How quickly were you able to start doing skin to skin from that moment?
Actually not till the next day, till the next morning, I was able to do skin to skin.
And then what was going on with, his feedings?
So they had put an NG tube from his nose to his stomach, and they, were able to use donor milk, which was great. And, so minutes after he was born, the nurse actually got me started on pumping, and I was able to produce just a few drops. And I began my routine of pumping every 2 hours and every four at night. And I was producing enough for him, which I was so thankful for. And by the time my milk came in, I was pumping about 25 ounces a day. then was up to about 45 ounces a day when he came home, which was way more than he needed. Mm-hmm. So I was able to donate that to my sister's neighbor who had just also had a baby, but wasn't able to produce breast milk, which was just thrilled me to be able to do that. So it wasn't till maybe a week and a half later, in the NICU, they, started giving him bottles and started weaning him off the NG tube. And yeah, of course, all along I had strongly wanted to breastfeed, before this happened. And I just thought, okay, now what? Is there any chance of us being able to do that? But this hospital in particular has a wonderful lactation team. And they even had a helpline you could call. And the day after Declan was born, a lactation consultant came to see me, and she observed me pumping and actually helped me fix some errors and showed me the most efficient way to use it and how to properly wash the parts. And the NICU floor even had a special room for pumping moms equipped with snacks and pumps and parts, which I thought was just wonderful. So she walked me through what a baby born at 32 weeks is able to do, which was at this point to latch and to suck. And she told me that she would be checking in on me to see where we were at. And she said, one day you'll be nursing your baby and counting his eyelashes. To me, that seemed like forever away, but it was something I really wanted to get to. So they eventually transitioned him from the NG tube to bottles, and then I would practice breastfeeding with him every chance I got. And they let me do it pretty much for every feeding that I was able to be there.
So how did that go?
So I remember the very first time I put him up to the breast. It was probably a week and a half after he was born. I was holding him, and it was probably, he was hungry, and they hadn't given him his tube feeding yet. And the nurse told me I could put him up to the breast, and I did, and he latched on, and he settled down, which just amazed me. And it gave me so much hope and encouragement. And the lactation consultant gave me a nipple shield to use that he would be able to get more milk with.
How did you feel about it? And was he having a hard time latching without it?
He wasn't, which kind of, there's, you know, it was so that he could be getting more. And I just remember being kind of disappointed, because I'd listened to the interview with Jack Newman, and I figured that would probably throw us for a loop, you know, when we wanted to wean him off of it. And he did eat more with it, but he was definitely latching on okay without it.
I'm going to research that more, because I've never heard that about babies getting more milk with the nipple shield.
Yeah, you typically hear the opposite.
Yeah, and I guess I'm wondering if it's specific to preemies or what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so anyways, you were, he was feeding, he was latching, you were using the nipple shield. And at this point because you were going back and forth. So maybe half and half feeding him, or how often?
Yeah, that's right. So by the time he was discharged from the NICU, he was eating mostly from bottles. But they told me I could breastfeed every other feeding and gradually transition. So at that point, once we got home, we pretty much just did skin to skin as much as possible. I pumped, prepared his bottle, and then practiced breastfeeding. And it wasn't till I reached out to La Leche League, and they advised me that the more I offered the breast rather than the bottle, the more receptive he would be. And after I heard that, I never gave him a bottle after that. And even now, he doesn't know what to do with one anymore. And then I also took him to see my local lactation consultant, and she said he had a good latch without the nipple shield, and she gave me some exercises to do with my pinky finger with him. And my biggest obstacle was that when he used a nipple shield, he wouldn't open his mouth big, since with the nipple shield, he didn't really need to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we worked on that over and over, and just tried getting him to open his mouth as much as possible. And I did use Jack Newman's resources. I think he has some videos online.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned those, because he's got some beautiful, wonderful videos, and they're so precise. It's like, here's a brand new baby eating. Here's a good feeder. Here's a suckler.
Yeah, that was so helpful. That was wonderful. So I tried all the things to wean him off the nipple shield. And I just tried to never make him feel pressured. I felt pressure. It was just pressure I was putting on myself. But I didn't want to make him feel that. But then I would say it took probably 2 to 3 months of weaning off the nipple shield. I think we would start the feeding with the nipple shield, and then try to end it without it. And but it was almost like overnight he just got the hang of nursing without it. And ever since then, with the exception of one nursing strike a few months ago, breastfeeding has been like second nature to him, and it's just been so rewarding. And I often think back to what that lactation consultant told me about how one day, you'll be feeding him and looking down and counting his eyelashes.
No, and you've been counting his eyelashes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love hearing that. Do you remember how old he was when he finally let go? You said he got it overnight. How old he was when he let go of the nipple shield?
He was 3 months.
Months after being born, which made him, what was that, gestationally? Oh, I'm going to have you do math.
1 month. Yeah, he was 1 month gestationally and 3 months adjusted, or 3 months actual.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out if that had anything to do with it, with the immediacy, which he got it. But I guess they do the same thing with everything, right? When they start learning to walk, it's fall, get up and fall, get up and fall. And then suddenly one day, boof, off they go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What were your feelings once you got home? And looking back on this experience now, how are you feeling about the birth?
It took me a while to process it. But looking back, and at first I did feel shame, and I thought, this isn't how things are supposed to go, but I've really been able to come to terms and to say, it wasn't the birth I had envisioned, but it went really well. And I feel like one of the things I had prayed for about my labor was that he would have a peaceful transition from womb to world. And I feel like he did have that. It was really, really interesting to see how hospitals work and how NICUs work. And it also opened my heart to other NICU moms. And, especially I felt like there wasn't very many resources for more natural minded moms who had preemies. And something that was really great was that the birth center that I had been going to actually gave me the email of another mom who had just had a preemie also at the same exact hospital. So that was really great. So it was really eye opening. Now looking back a year later, it's just, though it was hard, it was also just one of the best experiences of our lives. And it really taught us a lot.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And that shift, that mental shift that requires you to constantly be surprised and curious and adjust, just having kids will do that no matter what. But you set out with an intention of having an unmedicated vaginal birth. Mm-hmm. And maybe not at 32 weeks or 31.3.
Yeah.
But you did do that.
Yeah.
And other than just him being early, were there any other complications?
No, there weren't. Which, you know, we weren't really sure what to expect. And they did put him on antibiotics as they had tested my placenta, and I guess it tested positive for, I forget what they said it was.
Was it chorio?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But they said they would put him on antibiotics for 7 days just as a precaution, which I see some of the effects of that now. But yeah, you know, nothing. Yeah. There were no other things that came up that were serious, which we were so thankful for.
And then when you got home, where was your... Or not even when you got home, when you were still in the NICU and those 19 days you said that you were going back mm-hmm. and forth, how were things at home and in terms of support and being able to get yourself, honor your recovery, your postpartum yeah. recovery in some ways? What were you, or if anything, were you trying to do to honor that?
Yeah, so that was definitely hard to think about, you know, not putting much stress on my core as much as possible, and just resting when I could. But in the first 2 days, it was really hard to do that, going back and forth from floor to floor and going in and out of the hospital to the parking deck and all that. But I had such a great support team. My friends were there for me and brought me food, and my family was so helpful, and as well as my church. And, so yeah, I had a great support team. We had, lots of food being brought over, which I was so thankful for. The support was really great.
Mm. And then when he finally came home, were you able to cocoon a little bit with him and just hang yes. out? Or
yes, that was just, I think, the best part of everything. I dedicated every day with just, you know, trying to make up for the days that we were apart, and just constantly carrying him and just resting and really not putting any pressure on us to get things done, or we were just enjoying each other as much as we could.
That sounds lovely. And counting eyelashes.
Yeah.
eventually.
Yeah.
Bernice, before we close up, is there anything that you wanted to make sure that you got to that we haven't mentioned, or something you want to leave the listeners with?
Yeah, there are at least three resources that I wanted to mention. The first is the Solly baby wrap. That was so beneficial for the fourth trimester. And it just helped a lot at giving me those happy hormones.
Mm-hmm. And that gets the baby really snuggly up to you. It's very yes. soft and t-shirt-like,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, you almost forget that he's there. It's just, yeah, it's really great. And then also, I did a core program. It's Hannah Bauer's core program, and it teaches you everything you need to know about proper core health and how to engage your core correctly during everyday life, and particularly for pregnant women, as we have that extra strain there in the middle, and to help to prevent injury and to establish correct functionality for your pelvic floor. And I felt it really helped me to learn how to breathe and lengthen during contractions. I feel like we kind of think that we're supposed to constantly be doing this Kegel, and then we forget how to lengthen properly. And yeah, that was just so helpful. Yeah, and I feel that it helped a lot with recovery too, because I had remembered to do my breathing exercises afterwards, and it had become like second nature.
Yeah, proper breathing. And it's so simple, right? It's you don't have to get into a high regimen of right. You know, Kegels and doing squats and things. It's just even just plain old good, deep diaphragmatic breathing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's how we were born to breathe. So yeah, it makes sense. And then also Alexia Leishman's book, Fearless Breathing, which I think you had her on the podcast.
I did. I'll link on the episode notes.
Yeah. I loved that episode. But yeah, reading her book really helped me to address my fears about labor and delivery head on instead of just avoiding them. And yeah, it just really helped me to gain confidence and to address all the fears that I had about labor and delivery.
Fantastic. I'll put all three of those in the show notes. And thank you so very much for wanting to share your story. I'm glad that everything worked out. And now, yeah, happy birthday coming up.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Adriana.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if you want to learn specific ways in which you can support your physiology during pregnancy and labor so you can own your birth and have a flowing and connected experience with less interventions, then do go sign up for my Birth Prep online series. Classes just started, but I am accepting signups until February 17th. Go to birthfulcourses.com to learn more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Vistaprint and Family Album. To get free shipping on all your business cards, any style, any quantity, go to Vistaprint.com and enter the promo code Birthful. This is a limited time offer. And find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. The title song for this podcast is Vivace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Oh, and here is what Bernice had for breakfast.
Yes, I had yogurt and sourdough bread.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.